Hi, I'm Tim Peter, and welcome to Search Chat, Solo Segment's podcast dedicated to all things search, AI, and content marketing related. Who is Solo Segment? Well, we're a technology company focused on site search analytics and AI-driven content discovery to improve search results, increase customer satisfaction, and unlock revenue for your company. Solo Segment, make your search smarter. You can learn more at solosegment.com. In this episode of Search Chat, Solo Segment CEO Steve Zaker and I discuss the need for trust when dealing with customer data. We also talk about how you can use customer data and still maintain a trusted relationship with your customers. And we take a look at some of the folks who haven't done such a great job there, so you can learn what not to do. All that and more on the latest Solo Segment Search Chat, coming at you right about now. Well, hey, Steve, how are you?
I am great, Tim. Talking to you on a, well, it's not Monday, it's Tuesday. So a Tuesday evening, what could be better?
What could be better? Exactly. I always think of this time of day, The Big Bang Theory, which was a show I liked in its early days and I got tired of over time. But they Sheldon had a great term for this time of day. Mm-hmm. He called it prevening.
Prevening. That's a very nice sound.
Right? Where it's not quite afternoon. It's not quite evening. You know, we're in prevening. Pre-evening.
I really, yeah, it sounds like a time for cocktails as well.
Too, exactly. Exactly. Well, if we're referencing classic comedies, sure. You know, we should be in tuxedos, of course, because there was the famous 30 Rock episode where Liz Lemon walks into Jack's office, Jack played by Alec Baldwin. And he's dressed in a tuxedo, and she says, oh, you got some big event tonight? And he goes, no, what are you talking about? She goes, well, why are you in a tuxedo? He says, it's after five. What am I, a farmer?
Excellent. Well, after five, and I haven't gotten my tux on yet. So,
or for that matter, your cocktail. Indeed. But nonetheless, we have just a bunch of stuff to talk about. And, you know, I'm trying to somehow segue from talking about tuxedos and cocktails to prepping for a gathering storm. I don't know how that's going to work.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, Scott Monty, who I would call an industry colleague. I know Scott a little tiny bit. He wrote a lengthy diatribe.
I read that.
What? I'm sorry?
A bit of a tome, but yeah, well worth reading.
Yeah, a bit. Yeah, it's definitely, you're going to want to block out some time for this one if you're going to read it, but it is worth reading. Mm-hmm. And he really connects a number of different threads that are important to us. I mean, we have a vested interest, and I think all marketers have a vested interest in, where he's talking about the coming tech backlash, you know, where the frightful five, Amazon, Google, Facebook, mm-hmm. Apple, Microsoft, are in, as he says, the crosshairs of pundits and government officials around their consolidated power and especially the use of data.
Yeah.
Now, this is a topic we've talked about a lot. We talked back, a couple months back about, can you personalize without creepy data and the like? But for some reason, this time it's starting to feel a little more real.
Yeah.
So I kind of wanted to sort of punt it out to you, Steve, and say, okay, is this real this time, or is there something going on here we need to be aware? What should people do when we talk about data and personalization and the long arm of the law?
Yeah, I mean, all of this, right? Everything that we're going to talk about today and everything that's kind of related to this topic is related to trust. You can tease, I mean, so people say, oh, this is about data and all this is about regulation and everything. It's not about that at all. It actually is. And it's something you said earlier, we'll come back to, I'm sure, later. But it really does come back down to trust. Do companies trust each other? Do people trust the companies they do business with? Do people trust each other? Right. And, you know, it isn't just a business phenomenon. It's not just an internet phenomenon. It's not just a data phenomenon. You know, it's the way humans operate. I mean, if you look at if you look at anything that's going on in society today, and there is a lot going on in society today, you know, a lot of it...
Whatever could you mean, Steve?
So much. Well, I love the news coming out of Britain this afternoon, but we'll set that aside for a moment. But you know, it is, you know, so much of you know, the things that cause discord in our society, in our business relationships, mm-hmm. everything else, come down to trust. Do I trust you that you are going to help me achieve my ends as well as to help you achieve your ends? This fundamental kind of feeling that that the relationships that we have don't have to be based on anything other than trust. And often, you know, mm-hmm. even I spent a good part of last week in contract reviews, and which is always a joy. And, you know, language in contracts is made for the divorce. Everything else up to the divorce, right, is trust, you know? And all we're trying to do is to codify trust in the contract language. And so again, you know, we're going to talk about some of these topics in a little more detail in the coming 20 or 25 minutes. But what it really comes down to is in today's business environment, in today's social environment, in today's economic environment, there's not a lot of trust anymore. And part of it is because trust is routinely violated. And so it's something I hear from prospects all the time. It's something I hear from our customers. And they all want to know at the end of the day, when you peel back everything, whether it's something in a contract, whether it's your security audit, whether it's, can I trust you? Mm-hmm. And so that really mm-hmm. is the thing that I guess I find most disturbing, you know, again, across the social, economic, kind of business stuff is this mm-hmm. lack of trust. Mm-hmm. And it's because trust is violated. And I think that's the big challenge. And I think it's something that Scott kind of begins to tease at in his article, which is, you know, first and foremost, we need a framework for regaining trust. But at mm-hmm. the end of the day, you know, he asks a big question, which is kind of who will fix this? And
right.
It's a great question. And I think there is a role for government in all of it, because we're going to see that in GDPR mm-hmm. and CCPA and you name it, whatever else comes down
yep.
the pike.
Yep.
But there's a role for all of us in this as well. And, you know, I kind of despair that Google abandoned their "Don't Be Evil," you know, motto a few years ago. But
and instead just embraced. Nah, yeah, screw it.
Yeah, why evil. Not? But it's, you
know, if go hard or go home. Right.
But you know that really is it. There's a role for all of us in business, in society, personally and professionally. There's a role for us, I think, all of us in, you know, how do we act in a more trustworthy way? And how do we be less evil? How do we be less looking out for number one and think about, well, what's my balanced, you know, set of stakeholders that I have, that I'm accountable to? So that's mm-hmm. the challenge.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think this is what you were referencing a couple of minutes ago that you said we'd probably get to. You know, I've said for some time, in fact, I recorded a podcast episode independent of this podcast, about 5 months ago, 6 months ago, that talked about how, you know, GDPR is our fault as marketers, right? CCPA is our fault as marketers. The government has stepped in, the government has had to step in, because not all marketers by any stretch, but enough bad apples existed in the barrel that they've kind of made the whole bunch, you know, somewhat seems spoiled, right? And that's a real challenge, that these exist, these structures exist, because somebody came in and peed in the pool.
That's exactly right. It is, you know, again, it's, you know, we as business people, this is being done to us. And I know we sometimes feel like the victims here, but we're not the victims, right? Yeah. You know, it's not because, you know, we're being kind of set upon because of this, you know, onerous government. I think in a large part, as you said, you know, we've done this to ourselves. And I like to think we had no role in it. I mean, I like to think that our, you know, policies with regards to privacy and security are kind of on the up and up. But, you know, if we look at the general MarTech community, in general,
well, I'm going to do a commercial for us for 1 second. I mean, the one thing that I've been deeply gratified as somebody who works with the company, and in all sincerity, in all seriousness, and there are plenty of other MarTech companies where this is going to be true as well, that the fact that as these laws have come out, as GDPR has come out, and as the terms of CCPA has come out, The terms have come out. You know, we've looked at what we do, and every time we've been able to go, oh yeah, we're fine. We don't have to change anything we're doing, which is nice. And there are other companies where that is also true. And there are probably companies where it's not true, and they were still kind of okay in terms of what they were doing. They just happen to, you know, the regulations have been put into place that are maybe a little more, you know, a little more stringent than they might need to be. But because, as you say, because somebody went ahead and, you know, ruined the trust that should have existed from the outset, right?
Well, you know, I think we did benefit from the fact that our company was growing up just as a lot of this regulation was coming into effect.
Sure. Right? Fair point.
And so we had the benefit of saying, we're not going to base our business model on basically personal information.
Right.
And, but yet Google started 20 years ago.
Right.
And they based their entire business model on personal
information. Well, and to be fair to Google, I mean, particularly in their earlier Don't Be Evil incarnation, I can't believe I'm going to defend Google because I don't do a ton of that these days. But, but you know, by definition, a search is an incredibly personal thing, right? There's a very there's a very famous story, and it's kind of heavy and it's kind of dark, but there's a famous story about they used to have a board, a screen in the office, you know, big screen that would show a tag cloud of all of the terms that were being searched on any given at any given moment. And there were a bunch of engineers working in the office late one night towards Christmas. And the term that just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger was suicide prevention or suicide prevention hotline.
Wow.
And so, I mean, A, that's incredibly personal. And B, clearly was an indication to them of, oh, this is much more than what we even thought it might be.
Sure.
Right? Like this is is impactful to people's lives in all kinds of ways. So, I mean, you know, it's kind of hard to do search and not and not receive personal information because if I was going to pick a random, you know, a random search, you know, Steve, if you and I were to search for, I don't know, I'm trying to think of the term. The
Rogaine, a hair replacement.
Yes, that's right. Or you know, hair implants or something along those lines.
Right? If we were interested in those things.
If we were to be interested in those things for any reason whatsoever, immediately, whoever received that information, if somebody comes to your website and they use your site search and they put in things about, you know, some medical condition that they have or some life condition that they have, suddenly you've got a lot of personal information if you point it back to that individual.
Right.
And that's
and that's where we've kind of drawn that line, right?
Yeah.
And by the way, that was, you know, we were being selfish there, right? I didn't want to get put out of business by a regulatory. Right. I mean, you know, again, it's like, that's my job as CEO is not to go out of business, right?
Right.
You know, I'm going to make sure that we don't create a, you know, a business model that's based upon that. But at the same time, I want to add value to my clients. So I want to be able to deliver to them what they, so, you know, you seek a way that, you know, doesn't get you in trouble, doesn't do evil stuff, because some of that stuff just, I mean, when you think about it, it just feels awful, right?
Right.
But yet you go, hey, I can make a lot of money doing that. And so you've got to have that voice in the back of your head that says, yeah, don't do that. And, you know, and finally, I just, you know, I want to make sure that if the regulatory environment, you know, increases, you know, becomes increasingly, I was going to use the word hostile, but that's not the right word because, again, it's not, we're not the victims here, right? But if it becomes increasingly stringent, I guess is the better word. It's the, that's what you want to guard against is that you, you know, you can still add that value to your client. You know, our behavior-based personalization still works if there's no personal information. Could it work better if there was? Yeah, you bet. And would we be open to at some point evolving the product so that it could include personal information? You bet. But at the same time, you know, I got to make sure that for our business, it's sustainable in a stringent private in personal information environment. And it also is able to deliver value for our clients by helping them progress their business goals in that same environment. And so that's the goal.
Well, you know, so let's talk about how maybe not to do it for a second, you know, because there was a news story this week about Instagram is trying to, you know, take on Snapchat with its new Threads application. You had some interesting points about this.
God, I just roll my eyes at this thing. So, and I hope we're going to talk about the business roundtable soon.
Oh, we're coming back to that. Okay, don't you fret.
Because, you know, it was fascinating. It's, you know, you always have to look at, and this goes for anything in life, right? What is what people say and what people do, right? You have to look at those two things. And to the extent that those things align, then you can have trust, right? Then you can know that, well, this person is, you know, literally walking the talk, right? And then you have to look at sometimes how those things diverge, you know, those two paths in the woods. And that's what I see here, right? I mean, Instagram/Facebook, right? You know, they say, hey, we have to, you know, do this thing that Snapchat did to compete, and we're going to give you, the user, this great benefit. You know, you can, you know, choose these groups, right? It'll kind of work like Facebook works, right? You know, it doesn't go to everybody. It goes to the people you know and trust.
Right.
Of course, why are they doing that? Because they love their users and they want to provide them with this. No, they want the data.
Steve, I'm shocked to discover that this is what Facebook is actually doing.
Data, it would be. And you know, and the fact that they do this in the moment where trust at them is an all-time low, everybody knows that they're going to screw with the data. I find it almost shocking, but not really. I guess I'm more disappointed than shocked. It's kind of because their business is built on data, right? Their business is built on data. And so if they can get a better idea of your interests and more of your friends and all that, of course they'll do it. And so it's just logical, I guess.
Well, I've always said about Facebook, and I single them out differently than the other, you know, big companies a lot of times that get pilloried for this, in that, you know, Google, Amazon, Microsoft, Apple, they've had missteps at various points. Right. But what really seems to separate Facebook from the others in this regard is their almost willful ignorance. You know, it's like they don't know how to do it any other way, you know, at least from my point of view.
Oh, no. I'm not saying willful ignorance. I don't think there's any almost about it, but okay.
but I mean, you know, the fact that they make the same mistake again and again and again, because I think it's so baked into their DNA to just do it the way that they that they can't seem to stop shooting themselves in the foot over this.
Yeah, no, I agree.
And it's just kind of crazy. All right. So I want to come back to the business roundtable. And wait till you see this segue. You're going to love this one. This is going to be good. So... So Facebook really only cares about one thing, which is data. And we've been talking about how you can use data and have trust, but which is really only one thing you should care about. But for years, CEOs have only cared about one thing, shareholder value. And now some folks are saying maybe that shouldn't be the case, right? So the Business Roundtable came out and talked about maybe we should care about more than just the shareholder. And you again had some interesting points of view.
So I'm a accountant, finance guy, right? That's my background, and you know, I went to business school and got my MBA in finance. And you know, at Stern, they taught us about, you know, the purpose of the corporation, right? And it's to maximize profits for shareholder
value.
And by the way, in the dark recesses of the night, I will admit to myself, I have long held that point of view, right?
I
have...
You and pretty much the entire business and economic community for the last, 40 years
or so. Yeah, absolutely. Right? But, you know, if you do look at that, and I think they cite Milton Friedman a bunch in this whole thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you really peel back to the original thought there, right, it's because in pursuing profits, the corporation that could then do all the other great things.
Of course.
Right? So it could go out there and, you know, do good deeds and pay workers a good wage and do all that other stuff, right? So I think that... I think that original concept, if you go back again to Friedman and some of the early economists who kind of had this point of view, it was probably right. You know, again, I don't know if it all held together, because I think that, you know, back to the thing we talked about, trust at the top of this podcast, which is, you know, do I really trust that you, the guy with all the money in your pockets, is going to make sure that I get an equitable share of it, even though I'm not a shareholder, but I'm just some guy who lives in your community, and I got to trust that you're going to use that money not to poison my well water, but instead to, you know, so there's a lot of trust that goes on there. But sure, I accept that, you know, back in the good old days, that that the pursuit of profits meant something other than, you know, every quarter we try to boost earnings per share at the expense of everything. And at the expense of everything could well mean even at the expense of the long-term viability of the company itself.
Right.
And I got to tell you, I'm an IBM alumni, and I have watched over the past decade and a half that company pursue EPS growth to the exclusion of everything. And if you look at their current troubles, a lot of that is rooted in that basic philosophy. So I am all in on what the Business Roundtable is saying. All in. I struggle with what are they going to do about it, right? What are they going to now do? How are they going to act differently so that you know, they really live up to this notion of, yeah, it's about employees and it's about customers and it's about shareholders and it's about the communities they work in, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Because there is, you know, all manner of places in this country that are ghost towns because companies didn't act in that way. I mean, let's pick on Walmart, right? Has Walmart really, in the pursuit of profits, acted in the best interest of the community? Now, maybe yes, because they gave everybody everyday low prices. But at the same time, all the town centers of those places are ghost towns. People aren't making great wages, and you know, so I don't want to sound like a bleeding heart liberal here, but you know, it just there's this struggle, right? Like, did you know? Because again, well, I think Walmart's a really good example. Is what they did good or bad? And I don't know.
Yes, right? I mean, it gets into this interesting thing, because to bring this full circle back to the companies we were talking about as well, you know, if you look at Google's structure, corporate structure, in the way their shares are held, or you look at Facebook's corporate structure and the way its shares are held, they were designed by default to ensure that, you know, Larry and Sergey had a lot of power at Google, and that Mark Zuckerberg had a lot of power at Facebook, so that they would not be, you know, so that they could act in the best interest, the best long-term interest of the company, without the short-term quarter-to-quarter pressures that you often get in public markets and things along those lines. And that's had some real downsides too. So it's definitely this interesting, you know, dichotomy of how you balance those. And I guess my question to you, since we started with trust, and obviously we've talked about all the different ways companies can you know, hurt that trust. What, you know, for you as the CEO of this company, when talking to other CEOs, talking to other business folks, talking to other marketers, et cetera, what can people be doing to increase trust, to build a greater share of trust?
And I think it all comes back to that, you know, what are we saying versus what are we doing? And I think it's the acting that needs to be more demonstrative, right? So when we're, when, let's go back to Facebook, when Facebook is thinking about Instagram and changing the way it works, you know, they didn't lead with the data side. And I got to tell you, they should have, right? So if I was somebody at Facebook, I would have led with the, and, you know, again, some PR person will clean this up, but you essentially want to lead with, I know this looks like a shameless play for data. Let me start and tell you how that's not the case, right? We're going to create these walls, we're going to blah, 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 right? We're going to protect.
Right.
By the way, that allows us now to give you this great feature, because now you can create, you know, this walled garden for Instagram. Okay. So yes, you're going to protect me, and you're addressing this thing that I'm most concerned about, because I'm not asking for a walled garden in Instagram, because I have that on Facebook. Right. So I think that is, it's in the doing that is going to matter, and it's going to matter to our customers. It's going to matter to the communities and the other stakeholders, and it's going to matter to regulators. And to the extent that marketing technology companies continue to act like this isn't happening, like people don't trust us, like people aren't watching what we do versus what we say, I think that's where CEOs need to focus. I think that's where, honestly, consumers and buyers need to focus, is you know, I see your marketing material says all these fancy things, but tell me, show me, I guess, show me, right? Show me how you're acting in a way that really ties in with those things that you're saying about what you do with the data, what you do with security and privacy and all those things. Because again, I think there's been much too little focus, and that has, as I think you've said before, that has led to the environment, the regulatory environment, right? The regulatory environment was caused by the behavior of companies. And you know, again, it, to the extent that we continue not to do what we say we're doing, to act in ways that are kind of contrary to building trust, we're not going to be trusted. And I don't blame them. I don't, you know, I never begrudge that question that comes from prospects or customers is, you know, what's your problem? Right. Because I know why it exists. I know why they're concerned. And, you know, my job is to make sure that I can demonstrate in my actions, in, you know, our policies and our, you know, our assessment and audits of those policies, that we're acting in ways that really are in alignment with our policies, that we really are doing no evil. And that really is the goal.
Oh, that's a great, it's a great place to wrap up. If I can add one little summary point, and this is going to be the most leading of leading questions, but you know, one of the things that I've always agreed with, and I'm confident you do as well, is in the statement of purpose for things like GDPR and CCPA and the like, they talk about privacy by design and privacy by default, right? You know, it's just baked in from the outset, and you assume people want to be private until they tell you otherwise. And I, you know, I think that's one of the ways we've been able, as we've built the products and as we built the company, to be able not to be clean, is we kind of started from that place. Yes, at least in part because we've grown up at the same time as some of this regulation. But I think that's a good place to be that helps move towards what you were just talking about. And I'm just curious if you have any last thoughts on that.
Yeah, no, I think you're exactly right. I think that that's a great point, that kind of privacy by design is the model that we should be thinking about, right? That's the actions that folks want to see. Right. And, you know, again, if in the Instagram thing, Facebook had led with that, I think they would have demonstrated kind of progress and some honesty towards the challenges that they face and that we face. Because again, as consumers of Facebook, we share the, you know, the journey. But until companies can do that, I think, you know, the thing we talked about at the top, which is the whole trust, that is going to continue to be a huge problem. And, you know, in order for us to do business with our clients, they have to trust us. And so we'll continue to build that privacy in by design. We'll continue to be open and honest about, you know, where it's at for us. And I think that's the goal for other companies. I don't think we're any sort of beacon on the hill on this. I think we, like many companies, struggle at times with, you know, product features and stuff that might not kind of, you know, be the most altruistic. And but, you know, I think we have pretty good filters, and that's the goal, is can you have those filters so that it doesn't have to be some external, you know, organization that's imposing those on them, but you can actually be self-aware enough to realize, oh, gee, that's probably not the best way to go about things. Build some trust. That's the goal.
It's a great place to end, Steve. I love it.
All right, man.
Thanks so much for the conversation. Look forward to talking with you next time.
Take care, Tim.
Search Chat is brought to you by Solo Segment. Solo Segment is a technology company focused on site search analytics and AI-driven content discovery to improve search results, increase customer satisfaction, and unlock revenue for your company. Solo Segment, make your search smarter. And learn more at solosegment.com. If you like what you've heard today, click on the subscribe links you can find at solosegment.com/podcast. On iTunes, Google Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Spotify, or wherever fine podcasts can be found. You can also find us on LinkedIn at linkedin.com/company/solosegment, on Facebook at facebook.com/solosegment, on Twitter using the Twitter handle @solosegment, or you can drop us an email at info@solosegment.com. Again, that's info@solosegment.com. For Search Chat, I'm Tim Peter. I hope you have a great rest of the week. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll look forward to chatting with you next time here on Search Chat. Until then, take care, everybody.